Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Here's the weekend COVID report for the Commonwealth. 7 new confirmed deaths and 3,243 new confirmed COVID-19 cases in Massachusetts. Test positivity, 1.66%. Almost 500,000 doses of boosters in arms. Full vaccination rate still hovering around 67%. Those numbers give us a snapshot in time, where we stand in this pandemic. But as the CDC meets today following the FDA meeting Friday to consider Pfizer's vaccine for children 5 to 11, could the game change yet again soon? And what are the risks, the rewards, the considerations parents should be thinking about as we face the prospect of vaccinating younger children? What COVID-19 vaccine questions do you have? What do you need to know about the pandemic today? Time to ask the doctors. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us at Radio Boston. Those are already coming in. And with us to answer your questions this week and our questions, Dr. Catherine Gergen-Barnett, Vice Chair of Primary Care Innovation and Transformation in the Department of Family Medicine at Boston Medical Center and Boston University School of Medicine. Welcome back, Dr. Gergen-Barnett.
Thank you so much for having me.
Glad to have you. And to add a new voice this week on Ask the Doctors, Dr. Dan Rao. She is Chief of Pediatric Hospital Medicine at Tufts Children's Hospital and co-hosts Pediatrics On Call for Kids on Doctor Radio on Sirius XM. Dr. Rao, thanks for joining Ask the Doctors.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
All right, so Dr. Gergen-Barnett, FDA has given the green light. The CDC's advisory panel is considering it today and tomorrow. What are they considering in terms of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine for kids ages 5 to 11?
Yeah, so thank you so much, Tiziana. So just to really kind of talk about the historic nature of today, as you shared, the FDA last week sort of green-lighted the EUA, but no shots can go into kids' arms 5 to 11 until the deliberations of today. And the advisory committee is really looking at the safety and efficacy data that we know about the Pfizer vaccine for children 5 to 11. We know that it is now a 10 microgram shot that they're looking at. We also know that they have data that it is about 91% effective for symptomatic COVID-19 prevention for this age group. And listening to the live deliberation, actually, you can listen to it live. They're talking a lot about the risk of myocarditis, if there is a risk. I know that has been a concern for teen boys mostly. And I know Dr. Rausch has done some great commentary on this. And across the board, every commentator that is speaking today really talks about the risk of myocarditis being much, much lower in the vaccine compared to actually getting COVID-19 and the cardiac risk that comes with that for children, as well as the huge impact that COVID-19 has had on our children and families and communities over the last 19 months.
So just to clarify for listeners, EUA is emergency use authorization. And to be clear, that's what we're talking about here, not full FDA approval of a drug, but emergency use authorization, as was the case with the vaccines early on when they were authorized for adults. I will go to the phones in a minute, 800-423-TALK to ask your question. But first, Dr. Rausch, I'm going to play a little sound from Dr. Rochelle Walensky, head of the CDC. She's actually an Ask the Doctors alumna, speaking earlier today before the panel that is considering the data on Pfizer's kid vaccine.
Fortunately, these most severe outcomes are generally rare. The chance that a child will have severe COVID, require hospitalization, or develop a long-term complication like MISC remains low. But still, the risk is too high and too devastating to our children, and far higher than for many other diseases for which we vaccinate children.
Now, I understand MISC is multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children. So maybe tell us what that is. And then what is she saying here about risk calculus, Dr. Rausch?
So MISC is a syndrome. It's a collection of presenting signs and complications that kids have that we think is due to COVID. It seemed to come up after a COVID infection. Certainly, a lot of those kids have evidence of having had COVID, although not all of them. It has a big overlap with something called Kawasaki disease, which is also a syndrome. There's no firm test to tell you either one of these. It's a collection of how the kid presents and some lab values, which we think is consistent with the syndrome. We are able to treat those kids. For the MISC kids, the bad ones, they've required treatment in ICUs, and there have been some deaths nationally from that. For the most part, though, we are able to treat them effectively with supportive care and get them out of the hospital fairly quickly. So the calculus that they're looking at is you never want to give something that could cause more harm than what you're hoping to treat. It's the Saving Private Ryan debate. And I don't want to ruin the movie for anybody who hasn't seen it, but
spoiler
everybody
alert.
Agrees that Saving Private Ryan should be done, but you don't want to have 9 people die to save 1 person. So you don't want to cause more harm with a vaccine than the harm you're trying to prevent. And we think that although these complications like MISC are rare and other complications from COVID are rare, they're still more common than the risk of the vaccine. So that's what they're looking at to make sure that they agree with that supposition.
Okay. And again, just briefly, Dr. Gergen-Barnett, before I go to the phones. So if they go forward, if the CDC and the FDA say, yes, let's do this, then parents can trust that they have determined based on the data in front of them that it is more risky to expose your child to COVID-19 than it is to vaccinate that child. Is that what they will be saying?
Absolutely. And the vote is slated to start at about 4:15 today. So we're right sort of at the cusp. And Walensky, once she gives the green light, which is anticipated at this point, children 5 to 11 can start getting vaccines. And very much with this idea, the preponderance of evidence, in other words, the vast majority of evidence, everything sort of no stone being left unturned, shows us that the benefit of getting the vaccine far, far outweighs the risks of getting COVID-19. And therefore, there's good safety to back it up and to start delivering to our children.
All right, let's go to those phones. 1-800-423-8255. Ellen's on the line in Brookline. Ellen, go ahead with your question.
All right. There was a woman in my building, and myself, we're both 70 years old, and she was talking with me the other day about the boosters. I know I have a cold now, so I know I can't get the shot. However, as soon as I get rid of my cold, I was wondering if I should get the booster. I had my second and final Moderna on the 7th of April of this year.
Thank you for the question, Ellen. Dr. Rausch, so 2 parts. First, can she not get a booster while she has a cold? And second, after the cold, as a 70-year-old who had the last Moderna shot in April, what about boosters?
So I'll take the second part first, because that's the easy one. The boosters are recommended for 6 months after you get your last either dose of Pfizer or Moderna. And they're being offered to high-risk populations, and 78 qualifies you. So go get the booster. In terms of not getting the shot while you have some other thing going on, like a cold, for the most part, we don't think that colds, minor viral illnesses, are contraindications, are reasons not to get a booster. For kids, for sure, you take every opportunity to get the vaccines in that they need. COVID now and every other vaccine that's out there, and minor illnesses don't deter you from getting a vaccination shot.
Dr. Gergen-Barnett, to follow up on that, I remember when I brought my 16-year-old in to get his Pfizer booster. It was during his regular well child checkup, and he couldn't, not booster, original shot, he could not get another vaccine that he was due for at the same time. Is that something that parents need to be prepared for if they choose to have their children vaccinated?
I'm so glad you're asking that. First of all, Ellen, I will say you will not be due for your booster until November 7th, if my calculations go. So you have a few days to get better from your cold and rest up. But absolutely great question and a really important thing for parents to know is we actually are now saying that it, in terms of getting vaccines and in terms of getting boosters, you can get other vaccines at the same time. So it's really wonderful for family medicine clinics and pediatric clinics that will be administering the vaccine for children 5 to 11, and of course, you know, older children and adults. That you should and can come in and get your shot at the same time, get your flu shot, which we're absolutely putting the plug in for anybody who hasn't gotten it. We want to avoid what we're calling a twindemic, where people, you know, may be getting flu and COVID, and just, you know, really, really trying to keep people safe and healthy this winter.
All right. I'm going to go to Twitter now. We've got a question from at Kale Katie. If you have time for a question on boosters, what happens to those that don't get used? Feels wrong taking a booster when so many around the world are unvaxxed, but is the alternative the shot being thrown out? Dr. Rausch.
Yeah, it's a great question. And people are very concerned with what's called distributive justice, that you don't want to take something away from someone who might need it as much or more than you. The fact is, due to supply chain dynamics, if the boosters or the shots been delivered locally, it's not going to be repurposed and sent anywhere else. So it really is going into you or your neighbor or into the garbage. It can't be sent anywhere else at this point.
Okay, 1-800-423-8255. Back to the phones here. We are Radio Boston. Ask the doctors. Joel, you are on in Jamaica Plain. What's your question?
The question is this. When adverse effects are reported, when adverse effects are mentioned, we don't differentiate between those that are reported and those that are unreported. The general estimation of the ratios between the reported and unreported adverse effects are at least an order of magnitude, which is 10 to 1, if not more. To present the number of reported adverse effects as indicating the actual number of adverse effects is false and should not be done.
Thank you for that, Joel. I'm going to take that, give that to Dr. Catherine Gergen-Barnett. I think this is an argument that there is undercounting in adverse effects, as there have been arguments about undercounting in cases of COVID. And I want to give you a chance to address that, Dr. Gergen-Barnett.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's really this opportunity, I think, for people to be able to participate in this huge public health effort. So the CDC has a monitoring system that they have been really kind of clear and giving out. It's called V-Safe, and it's an app and lots of other ways to access it, where you can enroll either yourself, or actually they're now allowing folks who haven't themselves been vaccinated, but they can enroll their child or if they're a caregiver, and if there's any adverse effect of the vaccine, this gives an opportunity for people to put anything in there, and it will be counted towards a greater data set because, you know, ultimately, we're all really in this together. And the, you know, 4,000 plus children in the trial gave us a lot of data. And you know, of course, thousands and thousands of people who have gotten the vaccine in the United States. And let's just all make sure that we're participating and putting that in.
1-800-423-8255. Solon is on the line in Worcester. Solon, what's your question?
Hi, yes. Thanks for taking the call. I'm wondering about a recommendation for which booster to get. I'm a 28-year-old male, and I got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine back in March. And I hear that the mRNA vaccines provide a greater protection from COVID, but I also know that they have a greater risk with heart inflammation for people in my age group, men who are in their 20s. And so I was just hoping to hear advice about that.
Thank you, Solon. And just quickly, Dr. Rausch, before I turn to you, always noting best to talk to your own personal physician. We're giving general medical question answers here, but it's always responsible of us to note you should also always consult your own doctor. Okay, Dr. Rausch, over to you.
So the data that was presented to the FDA and the CDC to qualify for boosters was the same series. So it was, if you'd had Moderna, it was Moderna again. If you had Pfizer, it was Pfizer again. There is some scientific theoretic benefit of mixing them up that's being done in other countries. Some European countries are doing that, and there are studies in the United States about that. But currently, the recommendation is to stick with what you got before.
Although you are allowed to mix and match, correct, Dr.
Yes,
Rausch?
Correct.
Okay. All right, let's go to Anna now in Marshfield. Anna, go ahead.
Hi there. My son just turned 12 years old a couple of weeks ago, and he's on a smaller side. He's only 79 pounds, and he's not developed yet. I'm wondering if I can get him the children's vaccine instead of the adult vaccine, which he is currently now eligible for the adult vaccine. But because he's on a smaller side, I'm thinking he should probably get the children's vaccine. And I'm wondering why I would not do that. And if so, how would I go about doing that?
Dr. Catherine Gergen-Barnett.
Anna, I love your question. I think it brings up a really important point. We are, you know, those of us who are used to taking care of children think a lot about sort of weight-based medications, you know, for Tylenol, Motrin, et cetera. It's really important for folks to understand the vaccine was not developed with weight-based kind of categorization, but rather thinking about how robust is the immune system at different stages of life. So recognizing that adults have a less robust immune system than children, that was part of why Pfizer really went to this 10 microgram dose and is now looking at a even smaller dose for smaller children or younger children, I should say. So we know that kids along the spectrum actually may have had a very good immune response with just 10 micrograms, even in 12 to 15, but, you know, sort of gave them what seemed safe. And similarly, the risk of side effects goes down with a smaller dose. So all that being said, it is really based on the immune system. 12-year-old, 11-year-old have very strong immune system. There's no magical line there. Again, going back to Tiziana's point, I think it's really good for you to talk to your provider, see what they're offering in their office, and either way, a smaller dose or a larger dose, a smaller child will be just fine with the 10 versus the 30. But, you know, again, just you can speak to the provider about that.
Okay, let's pick up Shauna in Beverly. Shauna, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a 5-year-old and a 9-year-old, so I'm interested in the approval for vaccination for that age group. And I understand the calculated risk, sort of how the CDC and authorities are measuring the risk of children getting COVID against the risk of what the vaccine might have. I'm curious what the risk is around emergency use authority for vaccines in general. And it doesn't seem like an emergency for the kids. I want to get my kids vaccinated, but I also wonder sort of where the emergency use authority is coming in and what the risk of that might be.
So Dr. Dan Rausch, is the question clear for you? Can I turn it to you?
Yeah, I think it is. It relates to the process for vaccine approval. So it's got nothing to do with how the vaccine is processed, how the vaccine is developed, and how the vaccine safety profile was put through. Really, the difference between full approval and emergency use is the amount of time they've had to study. One of the reasons they held off on pediatric data was they wanted a little bit more time to look at long-term effects, and long-term is months at this point, not years, clearly. But they wanted a little bit more of a record for kids before even going to the emergency use. The reason the adult vaccine was switched to full approval was just more experience with it. But in terms of vaccine development and safety protocols and all the rest of that, it's the same for both.
So I'm going to ask a follow-up question, Dr. Gergen-Barnett. What about that parent who says, well, then I think I want to wait until there's enough data for full approval for this for my kid?
Yeah, I'm so glad that you followed up on that, because, you know, I think that Dr. Rausch is absolutely right in terms of what is, you know, what categorized emergency use authorization. I think one of the questions that I also heard the caller asking is, well, is this really an emergency for children, right? Because we know that the risk of dying from COVID-19 is lower in hospitalization. And yet we also saw the rates go way up during the Delta variant. And we know that, you know, there's long COVID, which we don't understand. And so there are risks. And we also know that about 700 children, 18 and younger, have died, which is, you know, every one of those deaths is a tragedy. So looking at that piece, and then also really looking at the societal kind of value of where we are and the fact that we have children who have lost 2 years of school, nearly 2 years, with all kinds of social, emotional impact, and families that have lost wages, and, you know, the inequities that we know. So I guess I would just say that not only do we know that there are actual health risks for children, thank goodness they are smaller than they are for older adults, but they are there. But there is, again, this bigger question of where are we aiming our North Star? How are we going to get out of this pandemic? And part of that is absolutely protecting our children.
So, Dr. Rausch, last question to you, and I will ask it just for time. Amanda in Westboro wants to know, what if a child has already had COVID? What's the recommendation? Amanda has a number of friends and family in that position.
So the recommendation is to get the vaccine. The vaccine provides additional protection. There's actually some evidence that the vaccine gives you better protection than natural immunity. And we certainly know of cases of people getting repeat COVID. So we want to make sure that people are protected with a vaccine that we think is safe and effective. And I would add one more thing to that, particularly for kids, is we saw the experience with Delta. We want to prevent the next variant. And the next variant is out there. It's going to happen because that's nature. And if we can create herd immunity and truly prevent the propagation of the virus, we are much safer from the next variant, which could be more infectious. It could be deadlier. It could target our children better. So let's get everybody protected now.
And just a quick follow-up on that, Dr. Catherine Gergen-Barnett, I'm assuming it's too soon to know if breakthrough data on kids who are getting vaccinated.
Yes, that is correct. We still need to follow that. And again, just like the vaccines for adults, we know that if you are vaccinated, your likelihood of getting breakthrough goes down, and also severity of illness if you do go get breakthrough COVID-19 also goes way, way down.
All right. That's what we have time for today. Listeners, if we did not get to your call, we will do Ask the Doctors again. Sorry that we missed you today. Dr. Catherine Gergen-Barnett, Vice Chair of Primary Care Innovation and Transformation in the Department of Family Medicine at Boston Medical Center and the BU School of Medicine. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And our new voice, Dr. Dan Rausch, Chief of Pediatric Hospital Medicine at Tufts Children's Hospital and co-host of Pediatrics On Call for Kids on Dr. Radio Sirius XM. Dr. Rausch, great to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
That's our show for today, folks. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR 90.9, Boston's NPR news station. Thanks for listening. I'm Tiziana Deering. Join us again tomorrow. We'll do more Radio Boston.